Well, I suppose there were eight witnesses called yesterday, so it was a very busy day. It'll obviously be up to the jury to decide on the significance or whether or not they're accepting the evidence of each witness that was called yesterday. But I suppose to start off, the one witness who I suppose spent the most time in the witness box yesterday was a woman called Jenna Stack. She was the second witness called, the first civilian witness called by the prosecution in this trial, and she described going out for a run with a friend of hers along the Grand Canal in Tullamore on the afternoon of the 12th of January last year, which, as we all know, was the afternoon that Ashley Murphy was killed. She described going out for a run at about 3:15 or so. She said that while on this run, she noticed a bike in a hedgerow. She described it as having luminous green handlebars, which she said stood out for her, and she said that the bike was pushed down into the hedge, which she thought was odd. She said she and her friend stopped, they chatted for a moment, and as they continued their run, she remembered thinking it was a really nice bike, and she wondered what it was doing there. They jogged on, but she said they didn't get very far, maybe a meter or two beyond the bike, when she said that she heard a lot of noise coming from the hedge. She said it sounded like somebody was struggling. She thought somebody was in trouble. She moved closer to the hedge. She shouted into it to see if somebody needed help. And she told the jury at this point that she couldn't see anything. At this point, all that was grabbing her attention was this noise that was coming from it, quite a distinct noise, she said. She said she became frightened and wondering if somebody was down in the dense undergrowth. You and your listeners may be very familiar with the Grand Canal and its terrain, but we were told yesterday that it is the canal is slightly more elevated than the landscape around it. So she described wondering if somebody was down in this dense undergrowth. She said she took a closer look and she could see the back of a jacket. She described this jacket as looking like a navy bomber or padded jacket, and she said that she shouted into the hedge, "Are you okay? What are you doing?" And at that point, she said the man turned around to face her. She said that she could see his face clearly but couldn't see his hands because he was holding somebody down, a girl, she said, judging by the clothing that she could see. And through gritted teeth and in a foreign accent, she claimed this man said, "Get away." She said that he looked angry. She described the experience as terrifying. And I suppose, given the hour and given the content of some of the evidence that was heard yesterday, David, it might be no harm to just give your listeners a warning, because some of the evidence heard throughout the day yesterday was distressing and may be distressing to some of your listeners. She told the jury that this man was crouched over the girl, and she described the girl as kicking out hard, like a scissors kick, she said. She said it appeared that she was crying out for help. She described her as strong. She said the man was holding her down, and she thought that he had or was about to rape this girl. Now, neither Jenna nor her friend Aoife, who was out for a run with her, and we also heard from her yesterday afternoon, neither of them had their phones with them. But Jenna told the man that she did, and that she was going to call the guards in the hope that it would scare him off, that he would get off this girl. But she said that when she said that, when she made that threat to call the guards, she claimed that he made a sudden movement, that he lunged up at them as if to frighten them. And she said, when she was asked how far away was he, she said maybe 4 feet or so. And again, she said she was in this slightly elevated position because that ditch sloped downward. So this man was lower down than her. And she said when he made this sudden movement, as she alleged, she said she and her friend Aoife then sprinted off as fast as they could. She said her heart was pounding. They went off to raise the alarm and to look for help, which they did.
We heard from people who came across the body of Aisling Murphy as well.
That's right. We heard from a man called Enda Malloy yesterday afternoon. We heard that he was out for a cycle on his vintage High Nelly bike when he said that he came across Jenna and Aoife. He knew Aoife, he said, and he spotted them having an animated exchange with two other men. He said they told him there was a man with his hand on a girl's mouth, on her throat, he said in his evidence yesterday. Now, he hadn't seen anything, he told the jury, but he did turn around and he said he cycled his bike as fast as he could back down the canal to see if he could see anything. And when he got to that spot along the canal, he said that he saw a bicycle. He said that he stopped, he got down off his bike, looked down into the ditch, which he said was to his right. He went in to take a closer look, And when he did, he said he eventually saw Aisling lying in the ditch in some undergrowth. Now, it was later pointed out to the jury that at this point, Mr. Molloy didn't actually know Aisling, but he did use her name in his evidence yesterday. He described how her hair was down over her face. He said that she was on her back. She was lying face up. He said he went down into this ditch. He shouted. He was trying to see if he could get this person's attention, if he could maybe get some sort of a response. He said he didn't. He said that she was just lying motionless in that ditch. He then called the guards, and in his evidence yesterday, he said he remembered the exact time he made that call. He said it was 31 minutes past three because he remembered checking his call log when he was speaking to the Gardaí after they arrived. We also heard from two men who were working on the canal that day. They worked for Waterways Ireland. They were power washing a bridge along the canal. They gave evidence, and one of them, a man called Charlie Kelly, described something earlier that day. He described seeing a man on a black bike at Digby Bridge. This is just by the car park. Again, I'm sure your listeners would be very familiar with the various locations, but they were pointed out in detail for the jury yesterday and throughout this trial. They've seen maps, they've seen photographs of the various locations. Mr. Kelly described this man on the black bike as wearing a dark jacket, a tracksuit bottoms, he said, which had a very distinctive white band down the leg, and he said that this cyclist was heading towards Tullamore. At about 3:30 then that afternoon, he said his attention was drawn further down the canal, where he said two distressed-looking women were looking for help, claiming a woman was in trouble, that she was being attacked by a man who was on top of her, they said, in a ditch. So he said that he went down, he saw a bicycle, he saw a pink hat. He said he looked in and he saw a woman's body in a tracksuit, a dark navy and green tracksuit. He said it looked like a GAA tracksuit. He too said that she was lying face up, that her face was covered by her hair. And he also said that one of her legs was elevated at a 45 degree angle up against the stump of a tree. He described her hands as being snow white, and he said that he knew that she was dead.
Frank, what about the perspective of the defence? What was their account of the events that happened on that day?
Well, firstly, and I suppose obviously it's important to point out that Joseph Pushka is on trial for Aisling Murphy's murder, and he has pleaded not guilty to that alleged crime. But through the cross-examination of Jenna Stack yesterday, his defence barrister, Michael Bowman, put his client's version of events in relation to that interaction that she spoke about, because he is accepting, Mr. Pushka that is accepting that he was there, and he remembers that interaction with Ms. Stack, but his version of events is very different, and that was put to Jenna under her cross-examination. Michael Bowman, Mr. Pushka's barrister, again suggested to her that when she came, what she came across that afternoon was Joseph Pushka trying to find out what had happened to the girl, trying to assist her. And when that was put to her, Jenna replied, no, he could have asked us for help. Mr. Bowman said his client remembered the engagement with Ms. Stack, but that he couldn't make out what she was saying to him, and that he didn't mean or didn't intend to be aggressive. He suggested that when Mr. Pushka was seeking to speak to her, he got his leg caught in some briars as he tried to get out of the hedge, and that he shouted out in pain. That's not the impression I got, was the reply that Jenna gave to that proposition. Mr. Bowman then said that he was instructed again by his client, Mr. Pushka, who was seated in the dock quite close to him. He said that he was instructed by Mr. Pushka that the girl on the ground had reached out and that she was holding or had both hands on Mr. Pushka's forearm because he was trying to stop her neck from bleeding. Mr. Bowman asked Jenna if she had seen that. She said no. She said, I knew there was something wrong. I could tell by her. He was holding her down, leaning over her. She described the girl as completely distressed, and she told the jury that she was terrified by what she had stumbled upon. Now, she was also asked, and this was in her direct evidence, so the prosecuting barrister, Ms. Anne-Marie Lawler, was taking her through her direct evidence, and she was asked if she had got a good look at the man, if she could describe him at all. She said that she did, and she said that he had a receding hairline, shaved head, dark stubble, sallow skin and distinctive dark eyebrows. And she said that his jacket was zipped up, this padded bomber jacket was zipped up. She described seeing a stamp on the left-hand side of this jacket. The breast part of it was how she described its location to the jury yesterday. She said she didn't get a good look at the girl. She couldn't see her upper body at all from the way the man was positioned. She said she could just see a portion of her lower body and her runners. And under cross-examination, Then Mr. Bowman, and again he is Mr. Pushka's defence barrister, asked her about an ID parade that she took part in the day after Ashley Murphy was killed, so on the 13th of January last year, because Ms. Stack had told the Gardaí when they arrived on the scene that she had got a good look at the man's face during that interaction at the hedgerow, as she told them that she would be able to recognise him if she saw him again. So she was asked to take part in this ID parade the following day. And we heard that a number of men with beards or stubble dressed in casual clothing were lined up, and she was asked to look at them carefully. She walked up and down that lineup before selecting suspect number 6. And she said the reason she picked that man out was due to his eyes. And she told the guards after she had picked him out that she was 100% sure that he was the guy she saw leaning over the girl in that canal. But as it turns out, and again, this was something Mr. Bowman put to her under cross-examination yesterday, that man wasn't Josef Pushka. And when that was put to Jenna, she accepted that that was the case, that it wasn't Mr. Pushka, but she said he was very similar. And the other side, the prosecution then, Ms. Lawler, was given an opportunity to re-examine her, to ask her a few more questions after her cross-examination concluded. And she asked her if she had made a mistake when she picked out that man at that ID parade. And Jenna Stack accepted that she had. She was then asked if she had made any other mistakes in relation to her evidence, and she said that she had not.